Mine says, peace be with you. Y'all look so nice. Mike said it's gonna be like Pentecost Sunday in here. I'm wearing my Christmas sweater because I don't own a Chiefs shirt. And last week, Tony said, don't go buy a Chiefs shirt. Don't change anything. And I thought of that scene in The Office where Michael Scott says, I'm not superstitious, I'm just a little stitious. I'm not superstitious, I'm just a little stitious. So I'm wearing my red Christmas sweater. But y'all did great facing each other. I thought, man, we can just throw all sorts of things at you and you do it. Beautiful. I know they're working out my kinks while on my microphone. So back after college, I moved to North Carolina right away and started seminary. And while I was there, I learned a new phrase. It wasn't really a new phrase to me, because it's a popular phrase. But I was living in the South now. I don't think I ever thought about North Carolina being the South until I lived there. And I discovered that there was a different connotation for this popular phrase. You see, in the South, when people say things like, bless your heart, it sometimes means something else. And suddenly I was hearing it with a lot of frequency. So you know, like when you say a word or you type a word so many times that it begins to look or sound funny and you start to think that maybe you're spelling it incorrectly? That's kind of how I felt with that phrase. Suddenly I was hearing it all the time. Bless his heart. Bless her heart. And it just started sounding kind of strange. And I couldn't quite figure out why. And it took me a bit to realize. Now, if you're not familiar with that phrase, I know Missouri it said, but not quite in the same way. Folks can mean two different things when they say it, right? Sometimes people really mean it as a genuine blessing. Bless your heart. Bless your heart for bringing me a casserole dish after my baby was born. Good Lord, bless all of you for doing that for me. Bless his heart for holding his family together after his mother passed away. But other times folks mean something very different, right? Because hidden behind such sincere and compassionate words like bless and heart is sometimes sarcasm and pity or an insult or just, you know, passive-aggressive jab. It enables folks to indirectly make an ugly comment and then kind of soften the blow with this comforting, bless your heart. Bless her heart, she has no fashion sense at all. Bless his heart, he doesn't know how to park his car. He's not smart enough to know better. That's kind of what it means, right? My dad used to say when I was growing up, if you can add the words you dummy to the end of the sentence the way you're saying it, then you shouldn't be saying it. And that's kind of how I felt living in North Carolina. Like sometimes people wanted to put you dummy on the end of bless your heart. You shouldn't have been saying it in the first place. In 7 years of living in the South, I got pretty good at listening to tone and watching facial expressions to interpret folks and whether their bless your heart was genuine or it was an insult. And let me just tell you, church folks say it plenty both ways. So I get a little skeptical when I hear the word bless. When someone says it to me, I suppose I'm just a little bit jaded after 7 years of living in that. And yet here is Jesus saying, blessed, over and over again, so repetitive that I kind of get a little lost in it. It starts to sound a little funny, particularly because I have to filter through all the teachings I've heard over the years on the Beatitudes, because the Sermon on the Mount is one of the most popular things to preach on, but I have never preached on it. Isn't that odd? Well, not the Beatitudes themselves. So here we are. And what I've come to realize is that I think we've misused the Beatitudes a lot over the years. Like the misuse of bless his heart, we've shaped and interpreted these phrases as purely and solely exhortation and prescriptive for how our lives are to be lived. Because we always think that the Bible is telling us what to do, that it's like a manual. And in doing so, I think we may have looked past something very important that is happening in that moment. Now, you know those moments when you come up with an idea, and then you discover that someone else has already invented it or written about it, and they beat you to it? Well, that happened to me this week. You've heard me sometimes quote a blog writer, Debbie Thomas, and I love to read her writings on the lectionary texts every week, and I was making my notes about what I was going to say about the Beatitudes, and I had this list of things that the Beatitudes are not. And then the other day, I opened up her reflection, and what do you know? She did the exact same thing, and I think she did it a little better. So, because she writes so well, and she came up with a few I hadn't thought of, here is her list of what the Beatitudes are not, with my own commentary on it. The Beatitudes are not Hallmark greeting cards. Thomas writes, Jesus wasn't waxing sentimental. They're not meant to be platitudes. Statements so overused that they've lost their meaning. Number two, they are not to-do items. Now, this is probably the way I heard them preached the most when I was growing up. They were taught as exhortation, do such and such, and you will be rewarded. Be poor in spirit, be meek, be merciful, seek to be persecuted and reviled by others for your beliefs, because you'll get a reward if you do so. There was this kind of like transactional quality to them. We were taught to live up to the virtues listed within the Beatitudes so that God would love us more. That teaching does a number on a lot of us. So before I continue with Thomas's list, let me say this. And it's something I know you've heard before, but something we probably all need to hear again and again. Nothing you can do or say or be could make God love you more. And nothing you could do or say or be could make God love you less. Number three, the Beatitudes are not inducements to shame. Sometimes we feel shamed by the Beatitudes, or we use them to shame others. We might be inclined to read these blessings as judgment upon our privileged selves or on the parts of us that do not measure up to the qualities bestowed here. But shame is not constructive. It's destructive. As Brené Brown puts it, shame corrodes the very part of us that believes we are capable of change. Shame is not a part of Jesus' ministry. Number four, the Beatitudes are not permission slips for passivity. These words of Jesus have been misused at times to excuse injustice, to let it slip by, as if to say, well, it's okay that some folks are poor and oppressed and disenfranchised because that's how God has ordained it. Jesus even blessed it. Suggesting that God has ordained or even approved such things and that is acceptable because folks will eventually get their reward in heaven is abusive. It is a way of justifying keeping the oppressed oppressed. And it is a far cry from the desires of God's heart. And number five, the last one, the Beatitudes are not pie in the sky. Jesus is not telling the mourning and the meek, the thirsty and the persecuted to just hold on a little while longer until they receive their reward in heaven. Thomas writes, he is not handing out the afterlife as an opiate, as if our messy, earthly, ordinary lives here and now don't matter dearly. Jesus promises the kingdom of heaven, but as we discussed last Sunday, the kingdom is not solely in our future. It is here and now as well. We are creating the kingdom. It is always becoming. The Beatitudes are not meant to just ignore or write off the sorrows of today for the promise of a glorious kingdom life someday in the future. So what are they then? We've heard them as exhortation, as instructive, commanding us to live in such a way that God will bless us. But what if that's not all they are, or what if that's not what they are at all? Nadia Bolz-Weber writes, "What if these are not virtues we should aspire to? But what if Jesus saying, 'Blessed are the meek,' is not instructive? What if it's performative? Meaning the pronouncement of blessing is actually what confers the blessing itself. Maybe the Sermon on the Mount is all about Jesus' seemingly lavish blessing of the world around him, especially that which society doesn't have much time for. People in pain, people who work for peace instead of profit, people who exercise mercy instead of vengeance. So maybe Jesus is actually just blessing people, especially the people who never seem to receive blessing otherwise." Do you remember our story from last week's gospel in Matthew as we began the series? The calling of the very first disciples. Jesus is walking along and the shoreline, and he calls out to Peter and Andrew and James and John, and he invites them to join him as he goes about preaching and teaching and healing in Galilee. We just get this general summary that that's what he's been doing, preaching and healing. And word is spreading around about him, and suddenly this great crowd converges upon him near a mountain. And so he goes up the mountain and he begins to speak. Since Jesus' words telling Peter and Andrew that he would teach them to fish for people, these are the first words Matthew records from Jesus' mouth. This is his first recorded sermon, you could say. The first words he offers to the disciples and the crowd listening at the base of the mountain. And what does he do in his inaugural sermon? He blesses folks. He doesn't judge them. He doesn't say, "Hey, you've been living the wrong way, but I can show you the right path." He doesn't go down some long theological tunnel about who God is. He doesn't even start preaching love right off the bat. The very first thing he does is bless people. Just straight up blesses them. That's what he leads off with. As God's children gather around him, the first thing he wants them to hear as a community is their blessedness. He wants them to know that God sees their struggles, their hardships, their sorrow, that God sees their hunger, their thirst, their desire for harmony in the community, that God sees the grace they have for others even when they don't have it for themselves. He wants them to know that God sees who they are, all that they are, and that God blesses them as they are. And in this act of blessing, Jesus turns the world upside down. He blesses the very folks, the very things about us that the world ignores and shames even. Jesus blesses our vulnerability, our compassion, our peacemaking, our love. Jesus lifts up God's children and blesses everyone. For so long, we have parsed and dissected the Beatitudes almost to the point of rendering them bland. We've tried to decide who fits the bill of each Beatitude, measuring and judging ourselves and others. But in doing so, we've also missed the opportunity to see what Jesus is doing here. Maybe we've missed that what Jesus is doing, as Nadia Bolz-Weber said, is performative. That in the act of blessing, he is actually conferring blessing. Yes, we will still find values to seek after in the Beatitudes. We'll still strive to be peacemakers. Yes, we'll still spend time breaking down each verse and envisioning this countercultural world that Jesus is trying to open our eyes to. But maybe we can also hold the Beatitudes for what they first were: blessings. Amongst all our interpretations, maybe we can also remember that in that moment, in that very first sermon, Jesus led with blessing. He blessed the people around him. What would our world look like with more blessing and less judgment? What would our country look like? Our communities, our churches, our relationships, if we blessed each other first? If we offered genuine blessings more frequently, how much more closely would the kingdom draw near? How much more intimately would we model what God desires for God's beloved creation? Blessed are you. Jesus proclaims it. Can you claim it for yourself? Can you trust in your blessedness? And once you do, as we'll sing in a little bit, can you become the blessing? As kingdom co-creators, Jesus doesn't only bestow blessing upon us, Jesus invites us into the sacred act of blessing others. If we, as people of faith, as the church everywhere, led with blessing, if we truly blessed what God blesses, would not the world turn upside down? As we come for communion this morning and we receive the bread and the cup that have been blessed, that Jesus first blessed before offering it, may we be reminded that Jesus was God's blessing to us. There is nothing we need to do to be welcomed at the table. Nothing we need to do to receive God's blessing. No virtue we have to live up to. So instead, come hungry, eager to be fed, for thirst to be quenched, and to embrace the words of blessing that are spoken upon you. Become the blessing that you receive, and go forth leading with blessing, joining Jesus in the sacred act of blessing others as we create the kingdom together. Here and now. Amen. With those who are serving communion this morning, come forward. Blessed are you who continue to seek light in the darkness. Blessed are you who keep choosing love over judgment. Blessed are you who are courageous in the face of fear. Blessed are you who work for peace when the world says no. Blessed are you who stand with the oppressed, the disenfranchised, with God's beloved children. Blessed are you who see the good and the beautiful and the Christ in one another. Blessed are you who keep trying, who keep leaning in, who keep opening yourself to be transformed by God's heart. Blessed are you, God's beloved. And blessed be our chiefs on this momentous Sunday. So go and be the blessing that you are. And fill this kingdom, not just the chief's kingdom, the big kingdom, with God's blessings. Go. In peace. Amen.